Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that doesn't even know the rules. I'm Jake Mintz, that's Jordan Schusterman, and we are joined by a very special guest.
Yes, indeed. And before we introduce our guest, we'd like to welcome you to the new year. It is 2024. This is our New Year's special edition. We are recording this in 2023, but this is a special pre-record because we didn't want to record on New Year's Day. And this is a very, very special edition. Jake, you just mentioned the only baseball podcast in the world that doesn't know the rules. We are going to be conducting something of an experiment here today, something that we've contemplated versions of over the years of our baseball content creation. But this is a version that I am so excited about. So I'm going to welcome our guest, and then we are going to establish his credibilities and his role in this experiment. Benji, I don't even know the best way to pronounce your last name, even though Jake does. So, Jake, why don't you pronounce Benji in his last name?
Benji Niasson.
Niasson, okay.
Roughly. Benji Niasson, that's it.
Niasson.
Thank you very much for the invitation. It's okay. It's special to be here because everyone's waiting on a brand new amazing podcast from you guys, and they're getting a dude that might not know that much about baseball instead.
So Benji might not know anything about baseball, but he does know about podcasting, and specifically podcasting about sports. Among other mm-hmm. things, Benji is the co-host of my favorite podcast in the world. I have said on our show many times that I do not listen to many baseball podcasts. I listen to Benji's show, the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast, every episode. It is my favorite show in the world. And Benji, you are from Belgium. You currently live yes. in the UK, correct?
Correct.
And you know nothing about baseball.
Basically. So I had no clue even remotely how the field works, how many players are there, what the players are doing necessarily before I started watching the match that you sent me. So that's a setup I had. The one small memory I have of baseball is that when I was maybe 11 or 12 as a kid, at school every week I had like a sporting session. And at least one of those sessions over the amount of years that I spent in school was something related to baseball. And I think after watching the match that you sent me, because I just watched my first baseball match today from the Major League Baseball. It's a game. It's not a match.
No.
It's a game.
It could, Benji, it could
it's
be
whatever
anything
you want it to be.
It could be anything you fucking want, dude.
It's a play. Anyway, the whole thing is that after watching that match and comparing it to that tiny sporting session I had as a kiddo, I don't actually remember what the rules were back then before I started watching this match. But the ball always went back to the pitcher in that game as a kid. Mm. And in actual baseball, that's apparently not the case.
Yes. So that is actually a very interesting place to start. So I coach kids, like yeah. for fun, 9 and 10-year-old kids. And when you get even younger than that, you'll edit rules of the game to make them simpler for kids because oh. kids are stupid, right? And so the not to say that you were a particularly stupid kid, but you know, all kids are dumb. And so throwing the ball to the pitcher is often used as a kind of an edit in order to yeah. simplify things for kids at that age. But before we get into the specific game, Benji, tell everybody what it is that you do in your real life besides act as a guinea pig in our experiments.
This is the craziest thing I've done in the last year. No. So basically what I do is I discuss cycling on the internet is a simplistic version of it. We've got a podcast where we analyze the tactics of professional cycling races, men's and women's races, and do a podcast on that. It's also available on YouTube in the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast. But outside of that, I come from more of a YouTuber background into that. So a lot of people that do podcasts about sports or journalists that get into the actual podcast, at least in the cycling sphere. I don't know if that's the case for baseball, but I was more the I make video game videos on YouTube as a kid, and then I ended up playing a game about cycling, and then I ended up making a podcast about actual cycling. So it's a weird way to get into it, but that's what I do. And yeah, outside of that, I still have my YouTube channel where I go through my own cycling journey, where I try to lose some weight, where I try to get better. And that's more of a wholesome entertainment side of things where, yeah, I enjoy that just as much as the other part. And that's kind of the scope of what I do. I had a moment where I worked in the actual sport of cycling, but that's history because I just enjoyed making YouTube videos more.
So yeah. Go ahead, Jordan.
Well, I was just going to say, yeah. And as I, of course, I've heard Jake talk about your podcast and hearing some of the podcasts. And I was watching some of your YouTube content last night just to be like, okay, what's this guy about? What's this guy's deal? Right. I know he doesn't know anything about baseball, but what's Benji like? I was like, okay, this is going to be a good time. But again, you're 5 minutes to listening. So, okay, what's the point of this? Why are they doing this? Jake and I are as deep into the world of baseball as you can possibly be. There is no level of the sport that we do not consume, that we do not think about. We've said it all the time. We are very lucky to do it for a living and thus spend all of our time thinking about it. And so what often happens is we lose sight of what the sport is to even casual fans that do know what baseball is, let alone those who know nothing. And so we figured we would take this to an extreme and go to someone who we think would be a fun person to talk to anyway, which Benji certainly qualifies, and give us his honest interpretation and best takeaways from a baseball match, as you say. However, if you saw his tweet a few weeks ago, we said if you were to show one baseball game to someone who had never watched the sport before, what would you show them and why? Like you want them to understand it and you want them to appreciate the sport or be entertained. What would you pick? And I think we learned that the responses pointed us in not necessarily the direction that we ended up.
So two things about that specific tweet. Number one, it felt like engagement farming, and I'm sorry. Okay. Jordan and I have taken quite a bit of care to not be that on the internet. And we sent that tweet out for the reason of literally doing this podcast. And I regret it because the responses generally sucked. Because it was a lot of people being like, here's the most important game from my favorite team's history, right? Mm-hmm. In the playoffs. And we decided to send Benji a game not from the playoffs. Yes. And the reason for that is Benji, again, has no context for what the playoffs is versus the regular season. And so we thought showing him the average, above average game was going to be a more representative example than like, you know, World Series 2017 Game 5, yes. Right? Which would have felt like cocaine.
Right. But even still, like, it all of it means so little, right? And that's why it's a great example of even people trying to answer this prompt and all of us who engage in baseball content every day. Like, you got to zoom all the way out and just think this is a new sport that we want to share. And so the game that we ended up picking, another important part was that especially because we had some new rules this year, which maybe we can't or will or won't get into.
Some big new rules. This season. Big rules, Benji.
Big rule big changes, change. Whatever. But we wanted to, Benji's getting really. Really
Benji's like, yeah. Here. Benji's like, yeah, I know the rules.
But we wanted to make
a
game from 2023 that we found entertaining and compelling, but it was just a game in the middle of the summer. And we happened to choose a game between our two favorite teams, the Seattle Mariners and the Baltimore Orioles. But this game did not, again, it didn't necessarily mean that much in the grand scheme of things, although I guess it technically did for the Mariners because they missed the playoffs by one game. But the point is that this is a game that in the moment, it was like this was an entertaining game that has there's a lot of baseball happening in the game. And what I mean by that is there are a lot of different kinds of events that showcase the sport in this game.
Could have there's a lot of homers. There's a home run rob.
Yeah.
There's good a pitching. Lot. There's bad pitching. There's exactly. injury. There's a rain delay. Like it has a lot.
And so this game is June 24th, 2023. So if you would like to go either watch the condensed game or watch the full game replay, which is what we sent Benji on YouTube, you can go check that out. Pause the podcast right now. You can go watch it or go watch the highlights and then come back because that is the game we sent Benji. Said, hey, take a look. And essentially we just said, write down all the questions you have and we will review them on the podcast.
So let's do that right now. Benji, let's hop right into it. Questions you had before watching, what were they? Let's go one by one.
So first of all, whenever there's like movies that I remember as a kid, whether it was, I don't even know the names of these movies. I just remember very vaguely that I must have watched a baseball movie at some point. And it's always talking about home runs. So initially I had the question, okay, how rare are home runs exactly? And that led me to the viewing experience I had. And I went through this match as a consequence of having that question. And there's a lot more than I expected. Uh-huh. Because I thought it would be a game-winning move every now and then.
Okay. This is a fair question. And honestly, when we picked this game, I was thinking, is this a little too homer heavy? And with 7 total home runs in this game, I would say that is definitely more than normal.
Okay.
That is, I mean, we could pull up the exact rates.
But I have it.
It was definitely more than normal.
There are, I believe, 1.2 home runs per game per team.
Okay.
Per team. So like a little over two per game.
Around two home runs a game on total. Now that number, Benji, has fluctuated over the course of history in baseball, depending on a variety of factors. So like, I don't know if you are familiar with this, but in the 90s, athletes were taking drugs that weren't allowed.
Here's some crossover.
I don't think they do that in cyclists. I've never heard of a cyclist.
No.
Even an American cyclist that
would dare to do that. Never. And so basically what happened was dudes were taking steroids and getting huge. And as a result, home run numbers shot up like crazy, right? And so the average home runs used to be way lower, right? And then it got really high in the late 90s, and then it dipped back down. And then in 2017, 18, and 19, MLB basically like changed the ball a little bit, and then it just started flying like a golf ball.
Right. And so since then, we've had some level of course correction where there are still a lot more home runs than there were in 2008, but it's not quite as absurd as it was from 17 to 19.
Yeah.
I do have a question. When these home runs happened in the game that I watched, every single time, the player that has the home run, he obviously does a little walk, but he goes off the field and he does something. And on the Seattle Mariners, you got the Neptune Trident. I was like, that's pretty bloody cool.
Pretty cool.
And then
right?
on the other side, there was the Homer Hose.
The Homer Hose, yes, yes.
For the Orioles. And yes. To be honest, I just wanted to ask, what is the coolest celebration that a team has in the league or whatever it's called across all the teams?
So this Great is so question. Good. And this is also part of why we were like, oh, this is perfect, because you'll see these celebrations, which are very, very new. The idea of teams using props after they hit a home run to celebrate is a very new thing. It is a very thing that just the last few years. And I would say this past season, about half of the teams had a specific thing. Sometimes they have a special hat.
Okay.
Sometimes they put on a special coat that's like a reference to the city that they have. I'm trying to think of the other ones that stand out. I mean, these are two of our favorite ones for sure, though. So you got to.
You have a tier list. You got to make a tier list of the ones that already exist.
We should. So there are some teams who think they're like too good for it. Right. Who are too classy and traditional. We would never do that. Yeah. Right. And there are some teams who are like, let's get weird. Yeah.
The Trident, I probably rate A tier, while the Homer Hose, a C tier.
So the Orioles have an entire like water theme celebration. You might have seen this. So when they hit a double and the pitchers were spitting water out of their mouths, did they show that at all in the broadcast? Okay, so They have
possibly,
all this
but
water.
I don't remember.
So they have I think this might have started after this game, later in the season. They have a section in the stadium.
No, it was there. It was there in the season.
It was there.
It started at some point early in the season. Yeah.
Where if the Orioles hit a home run or a double, they will spray a section of fans with water. from a real hose.
Yeah.
But so what was funny is when they started doing the Homer Hose celebration, people thought it was like a beer bong.
Yeah.
Like it looks like a beer bong, right?
And then at the end of the game, I realized it's water. Because
you thought they were.
Because it wouldn't be logical to drink alcohol mid an athletic game.
Let alone logical, legal.
Didn't Benoit Cosnefroid do that this year, though?
Well, yeah, that's a side story.
Wow, good
I'm
reference.
Afraid, for the people that
Jake.
Don't know.
There's going to be a few more of those where I have to be like, oh, yeah, for sure, definitely, man.
Okay, so your other pre-game questions are, how good are the Seattle Mariners and Baltimore Orioles compared to other teams in the league? And let's just one out of the way. Yeah, go ahead.
I think you basically kind of spoiled it when you said that the Mariners were 1 point off something called playoffs. So I'm guessing that like the fight for the title or something.
Uh-huh,
yeah.
Uh-huh.
So I'm guessing they're like a tier two team, while the Orioles Orioles, I won't lie, I might ruin the reputation of this team a bit towards a lot of fans, but Orioles isn't the most badass name of the country. So I'm going to go and say that this is a tier lower than Mariners.
So, okay.
Just because of the name.
Sure. I like how much stock you're putting in the name of the team. That does. I do appreciate
all
that.
The names. Yeah, you're one to talk where the names fucking change every 2 minutes. Like, at least the team names are the same every year.
True.
For the most part. Very rarely team names are changing. Yeah.
So I would say historically, the Orioles and Mariners have been bad. The Orioles were very, very, very good in the 1970s and then pretty good in the 90s. And then over like in the 21st century, they have been one of the worst teams, except for like a little blip in the road, and the Mariners as well. The Mariners had the longest playoff drought in American sports, like all four major leagues, basketball, hockey, and football, and baseball. And they broke that drought in 2022. This particular season, the Orioles were very, very, very good. And the Mariners were like, pretty okay.
Tier two. You nailed tier it. Two. You're all over it. Yeah. Tier two, but not in the playoffs. But your question of how good are they compared to the rest of the league, since I'm a Mariners fan and Jake is an Orioles fan, we wonder that every day. That's our biggest concern. We are thinking, how good are our teams compared to the rest of the
league? Also, Benji, like, I like how you're like, the Orioles is not intimidating. Do you know that there are two teams named after socks?
I actually do, because I posted on Twitter today that I watched my first match, and I was shocked at the video that someone sent me. I think it was between the Mets and the Red Sox match from 86 or something. I haven't watched it yet. Don't worry. I haven't watched the second match yet. And I clicked to see what the color of the socks were, and they weren't red in the video that I was watching.
Yes. So like when baseball started, like they weren't creative. They were just like, yeah, that team wears red socks. And that's stuck.
Wow.
I want to move to a couple of your other questions here before you started watching, then we'll get into the game action.
Oh, this question is so up your alley, Jordan.
Right. well, I want you to read it because I don't want to, I'm looking at it. You shared your notes, but why don't you, no, I want Benji to read the question.
Which question is it that you're looking
about the
for?
Closed league and how talent reaches? Just read the
question. So basically, is the major baseball league, Major League Baseball? I don't even know what order the letters in.
Right. So you wrote, is the MBL a closed league? I was like, oh, is that a typo? And then you wrote it again. And I was like, no. He wrote Major
MLB.
Baseball League.
MLB, that's fine.
Major League Baseball. Honestly, but
close
like,
enough.
Totally a fair assumption, because if you're just talking about proper English, in theory,
Major
it would make
baseball
more sense
league.
For league to go third and not second.
Yeah. And it's like NFL, right?
National Football League, right?
Major Baseball League.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Benji, when you say closed league, what do you mean by that question?
As in, there's no possibility for a second division team to get in there.
Correct.
Yes.
There is no promotion or relegation.
Yes.
Okay. So the teams that are in the league are always in the league because they initially had the reputation or the money to get it in the first place.
Correct.
Yes. Now this into your second question. Now we have had expansion over the years that have, we are now at 30 teams in Major League Baseball. And it has been that way for quite some time. There is a lot of talk about getting it to 32 within the next decade or so, but it has been 30 for quite some time and there is no promotion relegation.
How much money is involved in this sport? As in, if I'm talking about the salary of a cyclist, I'm talking about max 10 million on a yearly basis.
Okay. Yeah.
I have a feeling because this is an American relatively close sport that we're talking about like 100 million.
So almost sort of. Now obviously
so just one can I just bridge the gap here?
Yeah, please.
Quickly and then I'll kick it to you. The biggest difference in my opinion is not actually the amount of money, though that is significant. It is the length of contracts between cycling and baseball is very different. The amount of one-year contracts in cycling seems enormous, right? Like that is the standard. And then the higher you go, the less likely it is. The best baseball players in the world, all of them are on significant year deals, right?
If I take a look at cycling then, for example, I think the consequence or the cause of the fact that we've got so many limited contracts, we're now seeing more contracts that are like until 2028 every now and then. But every single team name, it's not like the
right.
the Belgian Bears of the or the Dutch, I don't know, Drapes. Like, we don't have those names.
Right.
The name of a cycling team is just a combination of multiple sponsors in the name. So, for yeah. example, if you'd say Pepsi McDonald's as a team name, for example,
which so it which changed I every should now say and then. That yeah. is a thing in the Asian leagues in baseball.
Yeah,
that
for
is,
baseball
is a much more common thing where you have the team
the Kia,
names are
the key. There's a team in Korea named after the Kia Tigers.
Yeah, Kia Tigers, company. Doosan Bears, like they were the Hyundai Unicorns. Like we've had a bunch of yeah. that, and in Japan too. But in the U.S., the team yeah. names are not based on sponsors.
Right. So, and then but from a financial side, yeah. Jordan. So we had the largest contract in baseball history was signed about 2 weeks ago, right? And yep. that was okay. 10 years, $700 million.
Across the 10 years or on a yearly basis?
700 total.
Okay. Yeah. Only 700
million. If it was every year.
Yeah. And I will say that when if you are thinking about annual salary, which is another good way to think about it, especially if you're thinking in cycling on a year-to-year basis, the best yeah. players in baseball are usually making around $30 million US dollars.
Per year.
Right. Per year.
Yeah. Like
between 20 and 30, certainly when you're getting later in your right. career.
But the yeah. teams are valued at billions of dollars. So when's the last time we had a team that sold? I guess Kansas City was the last team that sold for like $1.7 billion. And that's like the smallest team. Like the Los Angeles Dodgers or New York Yankees are probably valued at multiple billions of dollars.
Well, right? I mean, the Mets. So we just saw right. Steve Cohen buy them for $4 billion, I think. So, yeah, right. I mean, the teams are valued at all the teams are valued in the billions. Right. But I think, yeah, go ahead, Jim. Go ahead, Benji.
If I then take a look at how in cycling the revenue is being made, it's all dependent on the model of a sponsor giving X amount of money to a team. While if I look at this sport, I see the Seattle Mariners, for example, their name isn't the sponsorship unless Mariners is like a clothing brand that I know about. But there's boards of sponsors throughout the actual, like, the pitch.
Yep.
Yes.
And the part is the fee for people to be there, I'm guessing, yep. is something.
Yes. Yes.
But where else does money come from? Merch?
So I think the biggest difference between cycling and baseball is that you guys in cycling don't have stadiums. You don't have a singular space
yeah.
really that you can charge. Like I understand like at the end of races, right? At like the end of RVV, there's a big gantry. And there are people who pay to watch in specific spaces,
yeah.
but you can't charge the same amount, and it's only once. In baseball, there are over 100 games in a season, spoiler, and each team is hosting around 80 games at their home stadium, right? And you're charging like, it's a 40,000-seat stadium, some of these places. I think the average attendance this year was 30,000, 29,000 per game. Multiply that by the average ticket price of $50, like that's a lot of money you're raking in. But then the other side of it is the TV contracts, right? Yeah. There's a lot of TV money coming in and that gets split up between the teams. And in cycling, I think that the TV money, you can correct me if I'm wrong, like it is, how does that get redistributed to teams?
It's not being redistributed to teams. As in the VIP spots you mentioned when it comes to cycling races goes to the cycling race organizers.
Okay.
And the money from TV broadcasting goes to the cycling race organizers.
So
there's
like
no money of that going to the teams to the point that yeah. 95% of the income is purely dependent on the initial sponsorship they have of the team. And that's why the model in cycling is broken.
So there's no TV money making its way to teams or riders directly. Because in baseball, right, the TV money goes to teams who then use that money to pay the players.
Yeah. That is not the case in cycling. Well, they're trying to build that, but it's not yet working.
Yeah. And that not that it's, I guess, that broken, but in baseball, the problem is some teams are much more willing to spend money on players than others, which yeah. is what creates some pretty extreme discrepancies.
But I think in cycling, like there is a huge discrepancy right now between teams that spend money and teams that don't. Right.
yep.
or able to spend money in teams that don't. My sense, Jordan, is that in cycling, it's more of an ability thing, right? Like the lower teams in the league or on the world tour literally cannot spend. Like they cannot yeah. spend money. They will cease to exist.
Right.
Like the team will evaporate and run out of money and die, which happens all the time. Whereas in baseball, for these owners, it's more of a financial investment and they choose not to spend the money on it, mm-hmm. right?
Okay.
I think that's the yeah. distinction.
Let's.
I think so as well.
Yeah.
That brought me to a question that I just came up with, and sure. maybe I'm extending the podcast by asking it, but
that's fine.
Is there a salary cap in this sport?
Asking all the right no. questions.
There is no cap, as there is more seriously in other American sports, but there is a number that you can spend on payroll that if you go over it, you will then be paying a penalty. That okay. is
tax.
Referred to.
You pay a tax.
The official terminology that the league refers to it as is the competitive balance tax, which is basically okay. saying, let's keep, you know, this is so that teams are incentivized not to go into this to pay extra because that makes it more fair that all the teams are spending the same amount of money, even though it doesn't really stop them. But really what it is a luxury tax. It's if you go over this amount of money this upcoming season, it's $237 million, I believe. So if you are spending more than $237 million on player payroll for your yearly salaries, yeah. you then are spending an additional percentage at every dollar you go over. And then there's different yeah. lines where that goes. So
now, the reason there's that. No cap is because the union in baseball, I don't think there should be a cap. If there's one thing to know about America, Benji, is that we love our capitalism. But the union in baseball has a lot of power, which is a good thing, because it was really the first sports union in the States to fight for player rights. And the union will do everything they possibly can always and forever to make sure that there is no spending limit. That is a huge okay. deal. And so there will probably never be a cap in baseball.
Now, all that said, so... We've covered, again, we've started to get into just the structure of it. And you had one more structural related question, which I'll address really quickly. And then I want to get into the game action, because I think that is yes. what we're most excited to hear is like you watching the sport actually unfold more than the larger structure. But you did have another question about basically how do you get to where do the players come from is essentially
yeah.
your basic and- question. Mm-hmm.
That was basically the question. Is there like a college league? Is there a draft? And I think the match yes. itself mm-hmm. actually mentioned that towards the end, because the commentator suddenly said, oh, this rider was drafted X amount of years ago or something.
Yes.
Yes. That made me realize there's a draft somewhere. I don't know if that's related to the college league or yeah. if that's related to the second division. Or
so part okay. of the reason in something I referenced you know earlier is like all the different levels. One of the reasons why we love baseball so much, especially related compared to some other sports like football and basketball in the US, is there's just an absurd amount of it. And there's so many different levels. And so while you, as you also include a question here about there being like feeder teams, that does exist. Every team, every major league team has a system of minor league teams, which basically at least four okay. minor league teams all across the country of differing levels of talent. They are part of that organization. Those are part of the professional group, the professional ladder that is all under the organization. And then you have hundreds of thousands of college baseball players in different conferences and different levels all over the country. And those are players who are eligible to be drafted either out of college or directly out of high school. So that okay. is and, also where amateur
players. And then the one edit is that international players...
That is another thing.
So if you are mm-hmm. If you are American or Canadian.
Puerto Rican too.
Or Puerto, well, that's America.
Yeah.
But mm-hmm. you are subject to the draft, which means you cannot be picked until you're done with high school or get your GED. There are rules about that. But if you are an okay. international player, which in baseball tends to be the Dominican Republic, Venezuela, Cuba, Colombia, Panama.
Belgium?
We're working
not
on
yet.
After
not
this
yet.
Podcast, it will be.
After this podcast. Those guys can sign at 16. At 16 okay. years old with a professional team. And they often do. So that's kind of how talent filters its way up. I would say that like Jordan is very obsessed and into that world of how talent gets to where it ends up.
It's a long road.
It's yes.
It's you got to get through a lot of different levels before you get to the top. So
right. But development, I think, is
yeah.
development, it takes longer, I think, than in cycling. But I do, you know, one comparison before we hop over to the game is we are seeing younger players get to the highest level earlier than they ever have before. Is that something happening in cycling as well?
Yes. Younger and younger, we see teams trying to get 16-year-olds and so forth. They're trying to build junior teams under their U23 teams, under their professional team, within like one development pipeline, to then already start talking to 15, 16-year-olds of, okay, could they're in a club team then locally. Would you be interested in a few years to come up to our junior team? Would you be interested to come up to our U23 team? And at a certain point, it's kind of reaching a point where I'm like, ooh, it's kind of child's... Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is it like a bit too dodgy at this point?
Well,
you don't even trust me. That's a whole other back of words.
It's probably an issue in a lot of sports and certainly relevant.
Your hands are, let me just say this, your hands are relatively clean compared to our fucking sport.
Yeah, so we certainly can relate to that. Let's take a quick break. Let's take a quick break, Jake. And when we return, it's time to watch a baseball game with our friend Benji.
Play ball.
Hey everyone, producer Chris here with a brand new housekeeping note about our merch. Basically, we have a bunch of new stuff. So if you've been looking for a baseball barbercast themed beanie or bucket hat, or even a t-shirt with one of those cool pockets on the chest, well, you can stop looking and start buying because they are all available right now, just in time for winter. Just go to podswag.com/baseball and don't leave yourself clothesless this winter. That's podswag.com/baseball.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbercast. Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman, Benji Niasin. The date is June 24th, 2023. The Seattle Mariners are 37-38. The Baltimore Orioles are 46-29. And they played baseball on a Saturday afternoon at Camden Yards in Baltimore, Maryland. And Benji Niasin, thoughts?
Thoughts. At what point in the match are we? Because I just heard numbers.
Those numbers are the records of the teams. Okay. How many wins and losses is what that was. The baseball season is 162 games, which Jesus is insane. Christ. Okay.
Individually each team.
Every team plays 162 games. Yeah.
Yep.
That over, is insane.
From basically the beginning of April to the end of September and then playoffs are in October.
So this was right in the middle.
This is, yeah.
How many days are between matches?
No, you're playing. There's times when teams play 17 days in a row, or I don't know what the max is.
Jesus, I would say Christ. There's an off day every other week.
That is crazy.
Yeah. And then occasionally two games in one day, but that doesn't normally happen.
You're a fan of a baseball team, it's a full-time job.
Oh, you figured it out, Benji. You put it
but
all
you know
together.
What that means, Benji. Lots a lot of money. A lot of money coming true. In.
There you go.
Every day.
So you have the notes that you share with us. I like that you included conclusions after 10 minutes, conclusion after 1 hour, conclusion after the match. So let's just start with the conclusion after 10 minutes. Why don't you just read what you wrote to us here? And then we'll get to some
questions. Honestly, when I started this, the learning curve was crazy in the first 10 minutes because I had no clue what I was watching. I had
and they're
no
not
clue
explaining
what was going
it.
On.
They're not
no.
explaining no, it to you.
No, it was funny anything. Too. Can I just say it was also funny because the game we sent you, the broadcaster, is like a very good friend of ours. So, and he's been on the show. So like the notion of like you listening to Kevin Brown, who's doing it. And, yeah.
and you just, and Benji being like, what the fuck is this guy saying? It's so funny.
Anyway, so I imagine early on it was tough.
Yeah, I had no clue because no one was scoring points. So the scoreboard was 0-0.
Yeah, just, and you were like,
I think
come on,
it was,
when are they gonna score?
I already forgot the pitcher's name, but it's the pitcher that was named a lot during the match. So I'm guessing he's a pretty good pitcher.
Kremer or Miller?
Kramer. Yeah, that was the man. Mm-hmm. And he was pitching, I think, six times well to the point that nobody could hit it. So there were no battings. So
there was no points were being scored. That's true.
So nobody was hitting a ball. So I was like, what's happening here? But fortunately, that changed, I think, at minute 27 or 32 when there was actually some action happening. And I was like, okay, the game is on. I'm in.
Right. So for the just for people listening, there are no base runners for the Mariners in the first two innings. So the first, Kramer was carving through the Mariners lineup, unsurprisingly, because they're not very good. And then in the bottom of the second, we get our first run. Right, Jordan?
Yes, yes. And so we have Adam Frazier with an RBI single. I know you're not going to know what this means, Benji. RBI single off Bryce Miller, and I guess he gets...
He gets caught out.
He gets thrown out at home. So what was your... Like, when you saw run score, like, I'm curious what struck you about what was happening on the field, whether you understood it or not. In the early innings, like, what when you were watching what the physical athletic feats that were happening, like, what stood out to you?
So, to be clear, a run being scored is when you hit the ball to the point that it can actually run to the next base, right?
No.
Well,
or is it already about 1-0 in the scoreboard?
So, okay, so a run is when you touch home plate. Home plate, I'm going to explain. Home plate is where the hitter is standing in front of.
Okay.
You see it? Now, to get to home, you have to go all the way around the bases and then back to home. And once you touch home, you get a run, which is a point.
Okay, so a run is a point. That's the thing I was missing.
A run is a point. A run is a point.
So exactly. In my head, a run was just, oh, you're running to first base, that's already a run. Then next base, also a run. But
right. You're thinking about a run as like just running to running at all. Like the person with the bat running for any reason. No, that is not as a run.
I was trying to figure out what was happening initially, as in, okay, he hit the ball. So the batter hit the ball, the dudes on the outfield, hey, I'm learning the vocabulary.
There you go, yep.
The dudes on the outfield were running after the ball and they're trying to catch it. If they catch it directly, it seemed like the batter was out.
Yep, no, you got it, you got it.
The one thing I never understood and I still don't understand about the entire game, even after watching the entire game, is that sometimes when the outfield players caught it and the batter was out, the inning was over. And in other moments, it wasn't. So is it like an X amount of times someone needs to be out or something?
Yes, yes. Okay, this is interesting because, right, like maybe you at some point heard the term, you know, three strikes and you're out in some form. But it is three outs for the inning to conclude. So that's
three outs and you're done.
Three outs and it's time for the other team gets to grab a bat. So there you go. And obviously, right, that's designated on the scorebug, but the scorebug means absolutely nothing to you. So that's so to your point, you were caught off guard when suddenly they were done hitting.
Okay, so I have a little line score in front of me that I'm now showing Benji. Okay, Benji, do you see this here? So this is helpful. So there are nine innings. Ignore the 10 and 11 and 12 here. There are nine innings in a game. In each of these boxes up here, there are three outs. So the top of the first, once a team gets three outs, then it goes to the next team in the bottom. Then back to the other team in the top, then in the bottom.
Yeah.
And those little sections, those little boxes are each three outs, right? And then they switch sides.
You said there were nine innings, but I swear there was a 10th one in this game.
Yes, this game did go to extras, because...
Overtime. It's overtime.
One of the best parts, we ain't doing ties in baseball.
Fuck no.
Good.
No draws in baseball. Us Americans have no interest, for the most part, in...
You can't tie in cycling, even though it happened. It should have happened a couple years ago.
Yeah, I think this year was a moment in cycling where two people were sprinting to the line on their bike and they crossed the line so close together that on the photo finish, which zooms it in so much, it was basically invisible who won, to the point that it depends on the alignment of the actual finished photo machine by the side of the road. And there's this rule that is never used in cycling. I want it to be used, that if it's so close that he can't tell, those two riders technically need to ride the last 1 kilometer again against each other. And it's never used. I think the last time it was used was in the 80s or the 70s or something in the Belgian National Championships.
Sweet.
And that would be lovely. So I want my extras.
We got to get cycling extras. Oh, that's anyway, so good. Yes,
this was you're right. I like you're like there was a 10th. You're trying to tell me there's only 9. Totally.
And extra innings, it's like emotionally, it's overtime. It's the same like level of entertainment where there is more tension and it's very close and it's fun. If you go to a game and you get extra innings, it's fun. Now, because of the way baseball is, it can go on forever. There are no like penalty kicks to stop it. Right. And so there are games that have gone to 20 innings. Okay. Games that have taken like 7 hours.
Okay. That was what I was going to ask. How long is like the longer games that are played? 7 hours is crazy. Imagine watching 7 hours straight.
Yeah, we can. Well, it's happened. We did that.
In fact, some of the people suggesting the game for you was like, send him this game. It was 6.5 hours. I was like, why?
So Benji, I would say the moment in Jordan and in our career where we kind of like not blew up, like we were already working in baseball, but a very important moment for us was we were doing a live stream, like a live watch along to a World Series game, which is like the championship round. And that game went 18 innings and took 7.5 hours. And we didn't stop. We took no breaks. We were live on the air for 7.5 straight hours during like one of the most important games of the year. And so the idea of a game going on forever is very important to us.
Yes.
Yeah. So I get that. But
definitely does not happen as much anymore for a reason.
There is no finish line. We don't have a finish line.
That's true. That's definitely true.
Getting us to the next point in the match.
Yes.
Yep.
I feel like I started getting a bit of a grasp of what was happening on the field. The fact that the ball wasn't going to the actual pitcher, that it needed to go to the the base person that the runner is running towards.
Yep. Yep.
There was this moment. I don't know specifically when in the match it was happening, but it was I think it was the first point, the first run that the Orioles, their first run, there were two other runners on the field. The second one got neutralized. I think it was Urias or something like that.
Yep.
And there was another one stuck between two base players.
Yes.
That they were showing to each other. That was hilarious.
I'm watching this now, and this is such a confusing play.
Yeah, even like
for my kids. Okay, so a couple different things. So this is for people who follow the sport. We have runners on first and second with two outs in the bottom of the second inning. Adam Frazier is up, ground ball through the right side to Teoscar Hernandez. He fires home. Henderson scores, ball is cut off. I believe that's Ty France, right? And then Frazier gets caught in a rundown between first and third. As that happens, Urias is on third base. He scampers home, ball is thrown home by Colton Wong at second base, and Urias is out of the plate. So when this is kind of chaos is what this is. This is a breakdown of like the situation where when runners are caught in between bases, that is referred to as a pickle. They are in a pickle. Okay. Well,
they are.
They are literally in a pickle, right? And yes, this is confusing. So there are basically, I would say, four main ways a hitter can get out, a runner can get out. You can record an out. One is if you strike someone out, right? Three strikes and you're out. That's one. Two is if you catch the ball in the air.
Yep.
Three is if you tag someone with the ball. If I have it in my hand and you are off the base and I touch you, you are out. Go ahead.
There was a moment where the umpire, the referee, got called in. Because I don't know who it was that was doing the run, but it was to a certain base that he was running and the actual base player caught it just at that time. And there was a moment where he touched his leg with his glove at basically the exact same time that the dude was hitting the white square on the floor at the base.
I believe this was a stolen, and they reviewed it on replay, right? They went and looked at it. And slowed it down in slow-mo, and then they decided he was out. I do know what play you're talking about. Yeah. This was like a stolen base attempt, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. So if you touch someone with the ball, they're out. And then the other one is if you touch the base, like you throw to first base before the runner gets there, that's called a force out. So tag out. So you see where they're throwing it to first all the time on like a ground ball. They hit it on the ground. Someone picks it up, throws it to first base before the runner gets there.
They kept throwing it to the same guy.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so that's a force out. So just to review for all the listeners, strikeout, fly out, force out, tag out are the four major ways you can get out. Is that track? Everyone good? Jordan, you got it?
Well, there's strikeout.
I said strikeout. I said strikeout. Come on now.
Okay.
You want to go to our first home run?
Well, yeah, sure. Yeah, I mean, we already referenced it earlier where you noticed the celebration, but this again gets at kind of the question I was just asking, which is, were you more impressed by the batters or by the pitchers? From a physical standpoint, like you were watching and you're like, wow, that's what he just did, like that looked hard.
I think initially, when in the early phase of the game, I was impressed by the batters because Creamer was pitching so much in the glove. So the catcher got it so many times that no batter was able to do it. So I was thinking, okay, you got to be a really good batter to get through this, but that also means that the pitcher is really good. And I think the pitcher started getting the upper hand when I realized that while the dude was throwing, and even before you're throwing as a pitcher, one of the runners that is on first base could already start running to the next thing, and you need to like respond to that by throwing it to another base instead of to the catcher. And that was like an extra level to the game that I didn't realize existed.
That's called stealing a base.
Okay.
Because again, so, trying to get all the way around, and sometimes you're not going to wait for your teammate to hit the ball. You're just going to say, fuck it, I'm running.
Right. But those are very fun. Stolen bases are fun. It's chaos, right? And so there used to be a lot of them, and then they went down in like how often they happened. And then this year they changed some rules and they went back up. And so those are good. We like stolen bases. Those are very fun.
But
go ahead.
Question. Can that happen from every single base? Because at some point the pitcher needs to have eyes on his ass to be able to see it.
That's a great point. But he can turn his head like this. Like while he's getting ready to pitch, he can turn his head.
That's the thing I found weird, because sometimes they were just looking at the catcher, and sometimes they were looking behind them before they threw. So I'm guessing that was to catch whether someone would run or not.
Yes. So Benji has this question on his sheet, Jordan. I'm just going to read it out. At some point, a dude starts running base before the pitcher even threw the ball. Can you do that from each base? Is that why the pitcher looks at second before throwing sometimes? Yes, it is. You observe it, Fox.
You nailed it.
Nailed it. Now, here is a fun thing. So you can steal home. So you can run from third to home in the time that the pitcher pitches it if you're super, super, super fast.
Yeah.
It's very rare. But there's a very famous player who you maybe have heard of named Jackie Robinson. He was the first black player in the big leagues. He like broke the color barrier. So baseball didn't allow black players until 1947. And Jackie Robinson was the first black player that like broke through. Right. And he was very famous for stealing home all the time. I have this picture on my wall in my office, which podcasters can't see, of him stealing home. So stealing home is like a very cool, badass thing to do.
Yeah, but it is very chaotic. I agree. To your point, like again, it's something the pitcher has to worry about, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But I just said the pitcher more impressive than the batter on my sheet right now. Mm-hmm. But there's something about near home runs being caught as well. Was it Rodriguez that caught a near home run?
You jumped ahead. We were about to go to this play.
Oh.
So late in the game, I believe it is Ryan O'Hearn who hits one deep to left center field. And Julio Rodriguez, who is the best player on the Mariners. And
one of the best players in baseball.
Really a phenom of,
he's a big deal. He is very famous. He's currently dating one of the best players in the Canadian women's soccer team. He's like a star. Like he's like awesome.
And he's very good. I mean, he's good at everything, but in particular, his defending, which you're about to witness.
You said good at everything. Mm-hmm. How I saw baseball before I started this, and I didn't know much about it, but I knew someone was hitting a ball with a stick and someone was throwing a ball. I thought that each was specialized in their exact role. Are you saying that each player does everything?
Well, not quite, but almost. So when we say everything, yes, Julio, and he also hit a home run in this game, so this was actually good.
Oh, didn't realize.
There are three categories. There is pitching, there is defense, and there is hitting. Pitching, 99.999% of the time, pitchers do not hit. Okay? They do not hit.
Julio Rodriguez. Kremer, Miller, they are not.
None of the pitchers in this game hit. Okay? Rodriguez is incredibly good at running. He's incredibly good at fielding. He's incredibly good at hitting. There is only one player in baseball who hits and pitches, and that is Shohei Ohtani, who got $700 million a couple weeks ago.
I saw that tweet today, and I had no clue what was going on. I just saw his nickname Showtime, and that was awesome enough to deserve the salary.
Patrick referenced this on a recent podcast of yours.
Oh,
when you were talking about the AG2R French like tax stuff, because Ohtani got all of his money deferred, and
but 10 years later or something.
Yes, that's him. So he's the only player who pitches and hits, and that is why he is so valuable and he is unique.
But for the most part, you do have guys. Everyone else, for the position players, they hit and they play defense. And for Rodriguez, one of the reasons that makes him so good is that he can make plays like you described, where the ball is hit and it almost goes over the fence for a home run. But if you are fast and athletic enough to jump up and catch it and coordinate enough, then it's just a regular out, just like any of the other outs.
And does the catcher only catch, or does he do anything different?
So the catcher,
great question.
What's your read on the catcher? Like, like watching the catcher, like, does that seem like a fun job?
No. you've got protection over your face because you're going to break your skull if you don't have it.
Yeah.
About that, in cycling, until about 15 years ago, they didn't wear helmets while cycling.
Yeah.
And then it changed to like some rubber padding kind of thing over there, or leather helmet thing. And now it's like a proper protection helmet. Was there a point? Well, because in cycling, there was a point where someone crashed in a descent and passed away that eventually led to them deciding, oh, maybe the health of my head is pretty important in sports. Was there a point where someone got injured or unfortunately passed away in this sport?
Yes. So catchers, I believe, have always worn some sort of protection.
I mean, longer than everyone else, but still like, not really.
Yeah, like the catchers who are literally like right there, they have always worn helmets. Hitters did not always wear helmets. In 1920, a guy by the name of Ray Chapman got hit in the head and basically he did not die on the field, but he died shortly thereafter. So after that, helmets were then kind of mandated and common practice.
Not for a long, I mean, it took a while.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize this. It took 30 years after his death.
I was going to say, like, 30 years. That is an event that is referenced as like a, hey, maybe we should consider helmets. We don't really get them until like the 50s.
Two more questions about this. The speed was always saying 90-ish, 90-plus, for Felix, whatever his name is.
Bautista.
It was 100. Yes.
Yes. He's a big
that
boy.
That dude's ball speed, ooh la 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 la. But I will say, I was wondering how much does the speed go down after being hit? And why does the pitcher not wear a helmet to get it back in his face afterwards?
Dude, he's so fucking on it, Jordan.
You're so on it. You're asking all the right questions. So, especially because, as you point out, normally the ball speed, as you say, the velocity of the pitch towards the batters, especially for fastballs, most pitches, is between 90 and 100. And you saw Mr. Bautista,
Jordan,
probably throwing 101 or 102.
Yeah,
Jordan, we're talking to a European. Okay, let's be nice.
Okay, but he saw the numbers on the screen. So
I don't know what it means. I just know the
That's
number. I don't know if it's potatoes or
it's
tomatoes.
It's 165 is what Felix Bautista was getting closer to, roughly.
Yeah. But the average fastball is 150 kilometers per hour.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now,
I've never driven that fast.
Good.
Now neither, I'm trying to hit it.
Neither have we, Jordan. I will say that when the ball is hit, often it can come off even faster. So the fastest batted ball ever, and we have all data motion tracking for this now, right? It was, I believe, what, 122 miles per hour. Yeah. So that's 196 kilometers per hour.
Yeah.
So a pitcher is in a life-threatening situation and they just don't know it.
No, they know it.
But this is a very real thing. And it is fortunately, there aren't that many of these, like you would assume, considering the proximity, that this would happen more often. Yeah. It is a very scary moment that happens a handful of times a year. And to the point where the league has considered not necessarily helmets, but like some sort of special protective padding for pitchers for their hats, basically.
Bloody helmet. It's not like a movie where you need to see the protagonist to be able to sell your movie. Like, just give them a bloody helmet.
I just sent you, Benji, in the Zoom chat, a picture of this pitcher from a couple years ago who started wearing these like hat helmet things.
Dude looks like a mushroom.
Yeah, they are not particularly cool looking. And so there has been a lot of resistance.
And again, like pitchers too, like with the movement that they're making, they want to keep, you have another question in here about aerodynamics that I want to bring up, but particularly when it comes to movement and it comes to being able to stride in an athletic way. Yeah. A lot of guys have their head maybe moves a lot. Like they don't want a big heavy thing on their helmet, on their head. Right. I still think that this is going to be an issue that baseball continues to deal with, unfortunately, because you're mm-hmm. totally right. It's the right reaction, which is that they are hitting balls extremely hard and they are standing right there. So you're right about that. But
I also, now, you're right. He looks like Toad and Toadette.
Yeah. Yes. I will add, by the way, that I don't know why I think it's the batters.
Yeah.
Whenever they run to first base, they like give like fists to people around them, and then they do something with their elbow. They take something off.
So they are wearing. So batters get to wear, a level of armor and protection because the ball's getting thrown in their direction. So you'll have guys wearing elbow guards or shin guards or whatever.
Oh.
And oftentimes they will take those off when they need, once they get to the base and they need to run. But sometimes they'll put on special gloves to protect their hands for if they're sliding so they don't get stepped on or whatnot. So there's there's different forms of kind of protection that different hitters like to wear. That's not mandatory, but some guys like to really load up. Like some guys will put on like huge amounts of arm protection and then kind of stand over the plate, because if the ball hits you, you just get to go to first base. So I don't know if we had any hit by pitches in this game, but if it just hits you get to go first. You don't have to, hit the ball or anything. So
two things we mentioned there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
First of all, you mentioned the aerodynamics thing. Cyclists, everything we do in cycling is to make it more aero. So do we have that 0.01% extra speed? Why do the runners not wear aerodynamic clothing?
Mm-hmm. Great question. So this is, I think, one of the first things that it looks worse.
Yeah. Like, I think the answer to it, Benji, is when I go for a bike ride, I look like an idiot. You know, when I'm wearing my cycling gear, I look stupid. And I think that the sport of baseball is very self-conscious and does not want to look stupid. And I don't think that the aerodynamic difference is significant enough over the small distance relatively that they're running. That would be my answer. The first question.
Probably.
What was your other question?
But I'd be there for the marginal gains. But and the other thing is that I don't remember the exact question I was going to ask, but when it comes to the pitch arsenal, there was this thing that showed up with Creamer, for example.
Yep.
He had like four seams and all that kind of stuff. Like,
Yep.
Two questions about that and the target box you have on screen. What is that called?
Strike zone.
Okay.
Yep.
About that, two questions. First of all, The pitch arsenal means that there's a lot of data there. So I'm guessing there is either data sensors in the ball or the ball, bat. Or the...
Not in the ball, but basically cameras and sensors all over the ballpark. Yep.
Okay, that's good to know. But does that mean you can analyze your opponent and say, batter X is terrible when it comes to hitting four-seamers, so I'll throw a four-seamer, and
bingo.
I know that I'm good at four-seamers because my the batting average of my opponents versus my four-seamers are shit, so...
Yo, someone hire this guy.
You're ahead of the Rockies at this point.
Yeah, you're ahead of the Rockies.
I don't know what that
sure.
joke means, but that's you're there.
That's a
there's one team that doesn't know what the fuck they're doing, and you're ahead of them. Okay, so I am holding up a baseball in front of the screen, Benji. And so as you can see, trying to get it in focus. As you can see from the baseball, there are these seams along the side of it, right?
Yeah.
And depending on the orientation of your fingers on the seams, the ball will spin in a different way. So a four-seam fastball, which I'm holding like right here, okay, goes end over end and usually flies pretty straight like this, right?
Yeah.
Now a slider, I would hold it like this on the seam here. If I throw that, it's going to spin in a direction that I spin it. And there are various different ways that you can spin a baseball out of your hand that will alter the movement. And now that we have data tracking, like motion tracking for all of this stuff, pitchers are trying to throw different types of pitches to certain types of hitters.
And I don't know if you brought this up because of something specifically in this game, having watched it back, Bryce Miller, the Mariners pitcher, they talked about how coming into the game, he threw like 70% fastballs, but then he was throwing more sliders than ever. They were like, wow, he's throwing way more sliders in this game than he has before. And is that because of something that they saw in the game plan or something that he was working on? There's so many different reasons that pitchers change. For example, Bryce Miller in particular, I remember hearing earlier this season that the dude just had a blister for his first few starts. And so he wasn't able to throw certain pitches as much as he wanted to. So there's all kinds of stuff happening behind the scenes that impacts why pitchers want to throw certain kinds, but most guys have multiple different kinds and then that changes from a game to game basis.
That brings me to the strike zone where I didn't really know what the strike zone was in the initial part of this, this game, but it started evolving a bit to the point that at a certain point, I thought you had to hit in the strike zone, which you apparently need to roughly do, because if you don't throw in it or it's like out of it, then you can have a strike on your end if the batter decides to not hit it or something. But there was this moment. There was this moment where Suarez decides not to hit a ball when the ball was a solid amount outside of the target box. And I was one of those people in the stand that stood up and said, umpire, this is incorrect.
Yeah.
He striked out Suarez and he shouldn't have been striked out.
Okay, so he didn't, you're saying he didn't swing. The ball was not in the box, but they called him out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Welcome. This is, so what you are describing, the box that you are seeing on TV is a rough estimation of the strike zone.
Okay.
The umpire, the referee standing behind the catcher, it doesn't matter what that box says.
Okay? I'm telling you, augmented reality glasses for the umpire to see the box in real life, that's the next innovation in this
You're
sport.
Not totally wrong. You're not totally wrong.
The comparison
sort of
here,
different, but sort of you're on the right track.
The lazy comparison here, Benji, would be like time gaps where you believe them usually. Right. Like it is a helpful thing to have for the viewing experience.
Unless the race is in Italy, then you know they're wrong.
Yeah. If the race is in Italy, you never trust an Italian time gap.
Yeah.
That is true.
Yeah.
That is very true.
So true, guys. So true.
So Jordan knows what's up, right? Let's zoom ahead to the end. Okay. And the rest of the show, I have a flight to catch soon, but the rest of this show is going to be the walk off and then running very quickly through the rest of Benji's questions, but let's take a quick break, and when we get back, we'll finish up learning the rules of baseball. And welcome back to the end of Baseball Barbercast. Jake Mintz, Jordan Schuster, and Benji Niacin.
Close enough.
Niacin.
I'll accept it. Okay. I'm the umpire that says yes.
Attaboy.
Thanks. Very generous. Work on my strike call for Jake there.
Jordan, there's not a lot of Flemish in baseball.
So listen, this game that we sent Benji, I mean, it's again, we got again 7 home runs. We have a home run from Santander. We have a home run from Julio, and then Mike Ford.
Mate,
a big home run, his second home run of the game. 2 home runs for big Mike Ford. He hits it against Felix Bautista, despite his incredible ball speed, as you described.
His ooh-la-la ball speed.
Ooh-la-la, right? Unbelievable ball speed.
That's sticking, Jordan. Whenever I watch Felix do anything now, it's ooh-la-la, ball of speed.
And he goes to extra innings. No one scores in the top of the 10th. And then in the bottom of the 10th, Ryan McKenna of the Baltimore Orioles ends the baseball game. I imagine there was some amount of confusion here, but what did you see, or did you understand why the game was over?
To be clear, I had never heard of McKenna before this play, so I didn't know he existed until this moment in the match.
So that is, you're not the only one. McKenna is not a particularly prominent member of the team.
That's the nicest way of saying that he should.
He didn't start the game. This is important. He did come in as a sub late in the game. That's why you didn't see him for the first like 8 innings. So you were like, who's this new guy? Yeah. So
he's like a soccer sub who comes in the 88th minute.
Yeah. Okay. So how I perceived this moment was there's been 9 innings. My YouTube video is like 5 minutes left. So the game has to stop at some point. So I was guessing I was just guessing that a game was 10 innings.
Oh.
Okay.
That was how I saw it.
Okay. Yep.
So I thought the game was going to end because it's a 10th round. Yeah, 10th right round. Now, the first team that scores, game over. It's a tie. And I was even thinking, okay, what's the point of this 10th inning if, for example, the score is 6-0 at this point? Mm-hmm. Well, then the game just ends after 9 innings after what I've just learned. But
correct.
Back then I was thinking, oh, maybe this point scores for more points.
Oh, like a run in the 10th is more runs. Yeah. I like that. Okay, so Ryan McKenna hits this ball. It goes over the fence.
Yeah.
And the game is over.
Yeah, but important to note, there was a home run in this game where the ball hit the fence, bounced in the game. And because it was the actual metal fence on top of the wall, that was not considered a home run instead of a triple.
So, for context, in the 3rd inning, I think
J.P. Crawford,
Crawford rips a liner off of the railing above the wall in right field. The dumbest baseball thing is that there's like random shit above the fence in some stadiums. Because that's another thing, Benji. There's no set distance for the stadiums. So depending on where you are, the fences are a different distance from home.
Okay. It just blew his mind.
Yeah. But in cycling, it's like different courses kind of, right? Like different. It's not in the same.
So wait,
it's not as important. Yeah.
You're telling me that if your home stadium is shorter than the other teams, then your team is going to have more home runs than all the other teams?
Yes.
Yeah. But so is the other team.
If we're talking about aerodynamics, there's a team that plays in Denver that is at elevation, and they have more home runs.
Air resistance.
They have a lot of home runs because the ball travels further there.
Yeah.
Because there's less air resistance. And that's like a big deal.
If you live in an area with a lot of wind, does that impact the game?
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I know you had a question about the rain too, because there was a rain delay before this. You can play in the rain.
Okay.
But there is a level of rain that you cannot play in. There is a point where they will say, we're not doing this. This is a bad idea. And they will bring a tarp onto the field and stop playing.
What was the Omloop year where like the rain and the wind was insane?
I think Gent Wevelgem was like a race in cycling in 2012, I think, where the riders got blown off their bike into the ditch by the side of the road. They had to get back on the bike, try and catch the riders they were with initially. That was an epic edition and got won by Paolini, who is known for, I think, sniffing cocaine at some point in his career. So
hell yeah,
cycling is an amazing sport, everybody.
So again,
wait, Benji. Also, what, like that race, like 175 people started and like 30 finished.
Yeah. But it's a one day race, so let's be honest. Right. If you can't follow after 120 kilometers into a 240 kilometer race, then I'm not finishing that race either. Right. I'm just jumping in the bus and. In front of a little fire, and I'm trying to get a bit warmer in that way.
That is one of my favorite cycling things, is that often, like, guys who aren't going to win are just like, I'm done. Like, I quit. Like, quitting and cycling is awesome.
To the point that, so cycling's a team sport. There's an individual winner, but it's a team sport. So it's seven riders trying to get sometimes one rider to win the race. And there's moments where, I think it was Luke Plapp, an Australian dude, that started a race. There was a mountain at the start of the race. And he started working his heart out on the first climb, trying to drop everybody except his teammate to try and launch his teammate into the attack. And the reality is that he got over the top and he jumped in the car. 20 kilometers into the race. And it's like a 200 kilometer stage.
Oh, that's so good. Okay, so we have finished our match here. Okay. Brian McKenna hits the walk-off and they celebrate. Any thoughts on the celebration there at the end?
Well, they're drowning him with a hose, aren't they? Mm-hmm. So that's the only thing I really saw. And then, happy we won. Is there anything I missed?
So, well, here's the important thing. This isn't how the end of the game always looks, right? So this was a sequence where, you know, because they scored on the last play, the home team that bats second scored on the last play in extra innings, it was like a final move, like a game-winning move, as you referred to earlier. That happened last
I would
play.
Say like a but buzzer as you mentioned, beater. It's like a buzzer beater in basketball.
Yeah, but as you mentioned, like, or whatever, score in soccer.
Usually the nine innings end with a strikeout or something then.
Well, it could, right? It could end in about, but it could, if you're already
That's
winning,
boring.
If they were up 6-0, they would just get the third out of the ninth, and then that would be that. They would just shake hands, and there wouldn't be as much celebration, right?
So
this
wait.
Was more dramatic.
You're saying that in a lot of matches, the end of the game is celebrated by celebrating a catch or something.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's also fun.
So, but this is a good point, though, because this might be, maybe we were showing him something that was still too exciting and we should have shown him a very basic strike three and then a much more calm celebration, because this was a more dramatic ending, right? If you're making a soccer comp, this is breaking the tie in the, you know, in extra time in the 92nd minute with a goal, right? Like
where sometimes a team wins,
it doesn't happen very often.
3-1 and like no one
and then time just runs out, right? You get all your outs. So
let's fly through Benji's questions here very quickly, and then we'll chat a little bit about cycling and then we will be done. Weather conditions pause or impact the game. We talked about this for a little bit. Weather conditions in cycling are obviously so important. Like certain riders are way better when it's raining, and certain riders are terrible when it's raining or when it's hot or when it's cold. In baseball, that's not really as much of a thing. I would say like players aren't better or worse because of the weather in like a discernible way. And if there's too much rain, they'll pause the game in the middle and then wait for the rain to leave and then they'll start up again. Jordan?
But about half, and maybe not half, there are stadiums with roofs. We have indoor.
Okay, so there are indoor. By
there
way,
are indoor studs. Not now. It depends on where they are. Again, we've had most of the new stadiums that get built do have, you know, retractable roofs, so you can have it. It's not just fully indoor. I mean, I guess we only have one stadium now that can't actually open its roof in Tampa Bay. But yeah, there are places. Certainly in Florida, where it's raining all the time, or in Texas, in their case, because it's ridiculously hot. So they want to have it more climate controlled. There are stadiums that have roofs. Yes.
I have $1 million idea. So you know that when you're playing golf, you can play golf indoor, like a golf simulator kind of thing. Yes. You can hit a net indoors and it calculates the speed. Mm-hmm. How about you make a home baseball simulator? And wait. In cycling, you've got like the system where you can put your bike indoors, attach it to like a game on your computer. And throughout that, you can kind of like play, ride on your bike indoors against other people all over the world. What if you do a home baseball simulator, like pitching indoors or batting indoors, regardless of your role? Got to be some system you can make for, but wait. And you make an online game about it to the point that it can be a scouting pool. Hey,
Benji's all over it. Well, so again, most of the stuff you're describing exists in some form.
Fuck.
There are, ah, damn it, I was going to be rich.
My money's gone.
No, but you are mostly correct. And especially now in the winter, a lot of what training is using those tools inside, in batting cages, in bullpens, inside.
Batting cages.
With all, with, it sounds, I know, dramatic. With cameras and motion sensors that's tracking all these things indoors, not necessarily in a big ballpark. And that's spitting out information that you can then share with teams. You can share the video. There's versions where, to your said, the simulator, where we can hit, where you can hit a ball and it tracks it and it shows you on the screen what it would be like if you were playing in this stadium.
Okay.
Yeah. So that exists too. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
it's all- we talked about aerodynamic clothing. We talked about head protection. We talked about pitch arsenals, sensors that calculate the ball speed. All that stuff is like kind of hidden around the stadium. They're really high tech cameras. That's all new within the last like 5 years. It's so cool. Like it tracks the spin rate, the spin axis of the ball. It can track how hard you hit it, how high you hit it. There are all these different metrics that it tracks, and the teams that know how to utilize that information to make informed decisions, whether that is in development or in acquisition, are the best teams in the league.
There's one more question that I didn't ask during the match that I do want to ask. As in, there was this moment where there was a runner running to a certain base, don't know the specific base. And I think this one of the was one of the Seattle Mariners that was running towards that base. And the ball hit his leg before the base player could catch it. Is there a limit or a rule around the runner interfering with the ball? Because... Yes. This was accidental, but
Yeah, there's some that's, again, this is the minutia of the rule book that is often not enjoyable and to endure.
The rule book, does it suck as much as in cycling, Jake?
Of course.
Oh, yeah.
It's much probably longer, I would
say. Oh, and we have like stupid fines for dumb shit like you guys do.
Yeah,
all the time. No, it's like there was a guy, Jordan, who got kicked out of a cycling race this year because he threw his, or a couple years ago, because he threw his water bottle to a kid on the side of the road.
Yeah.
And
he got him in jail. Like, none of that. let's see what else we have here. Can a runner interfere with the ball? Limit to challenges? Yes, there are limits.
Well, if you're right, you can challenge as much as you want.
Yeah, if you keep getting your challenge right.
You can keep going. You can, if you keep telling the ump that they're wrong and then you're right. Then
right.
You can
keep going, questions for after the match. Is there such a statistic as the most likely area for a batter to hit towards based on previous games? Do teams use that to position their outfielders? Bro,
100% correct. No,
awesome
no
question.
You are exactly right.
That is perfect. There are like heat map type things where it plots like the likelihood. I can send you like a picture of one of them, but that's all. Yeah, that's very prevalent.
I love this next question.
Go ahead, Jordan.
In cycling, people tend to support individual riders over teams. In baseball, that seems to be the opposite. Is that correct?
100%.
100%. Now I would say we are more on the spectrum of supporting more. I mean, we have our favorite teams, but we are definitely more in the camp of supporting individual players over teams in terms of who
is
we
it,
enjoy.
Is it because you're supporting your state?
Say it again.
Is that because you're supporting your team in the neighborhood? Or
usually, yes.
Yeah.
Usually there is again, there's generations of your dad and grandpa and, you know, aunt and mother and all these fans were fans of the team for years and years, and they've been the same. Yeah, so that's usually how fandom comes about. But yeah, the loyalty is almost always to the teams and not the players.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
and that's because I think institutionally, our teams are bigger than your teams and mean more. Like,
that's fucking rude.
In cycling, I'm not talking. I think that, I mean,
my team is bigger than yours.
The comparison I would make would be like Anderlecht, right? Which I know I'm pronouncing incorrectly. But like in the Belgian Soccer League.
We're not doing
Belgian
the
Football
thing
League.
Here.
I'm sorry. Like when Vincent Kompany went to Man City, it's not like everyone followed him, right? Like I'm sure some people did. Or like when De Bruyne went to, you know, Wolfsburg or like whatever right? The Belgian fans of the Belgian teams keep supporting those teams, even if players switch between the teams, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That would be the comparison I would make.
They just respect the transfer and the players till afterwards, Eric. But in cycling, it's like they just follow the riders, I feel like. There are people that support a team, but usually it's related to a rider being on that team in the first place.
Right.
But
and when I got into cycling, I had a tough time with this because when I started, I was like, well, I got to pick a team to root for. And I'm an American idiot. And so I picked EF, right? And then I started realizing that, oh, I just like to root for the riders I want to root for. And that was a transition. And now I feel like I can compartmentalize those things.
I have, and then your final question, which I also very much appreciate.
I will ask it.
Go ahead.
Is there such a thing as women's Major League Baseball? I did the right order this time, eh? MLB?
You nailed it. We upgraded from MBL, yes. There is not officially, however, this is something that is becoming much more of a possibility, I would say. Maybe not in terms of the scale of MLB.
Where do they play?
The women. Well, so the first thing is there was a league that is very, very, very famous in American baseball culture that there are multiple films about, which I would encourage you watching, called the All-American Professional Girls League. That was decades ago.
Have you heard of a movie called A League of Their Own?
No.
Okay.
Come on.
I don't know. Tom Hanks is in it.
Is it
Madonna is
version of the Avengers? The Avengers? The baseball Avengers. A League of Their Own.
Yes. But anyway, the point is that was a thing that existed a long time ago. There is not an equivalent today. However, they're not professional women's baseball obviously to the degree of MLB, but it is something that we are seeing more and more women playing in college levels.
Yeah.
And then probably in minor league baseball at some point.
So there are national teams. That is a big deal. That like the USA women's national team and the Japanese national team and the Australian national team, they play tournaments. Okay. Mm-hmm. I would say the biggest reason that it's not is because softball is a big deal in America. Mm-hmm. And for a variety of reasons, softball is, how do I describe this? It is.
Oh, we got to do it. I would say with Benji, you send him a softball bat.
The bones of baseball and the bones of softball are the same. You run around in a circle, you hit a thing that's thrown at you. If you catch it, you're out. Like it would look 95% the same to you, right?
It's just
it's like
field.
Track cycling versus cycling, kind of like in terms of the differences of it.
To me, the explanation of like how women's baseball is currently at kind of sounds like there's this historical misogyny within the sport that exists in every sport, let's be honest about it, to the point that it's still at a starting spot and hasn't reached the point where it's breaking up.
Correct. The biggest difference is for a lot of the history, it was both women don't play baseball, but also women play softball instead. And so this is like the 70s, 80s, and 90s. You had women being pushed to play softball instead of baseball. And softball is its own awesome, unique sport that we really like and we think about and we cover. However, what that did is it pushed women away from baseball for a while and towards a different similar sport.
Is there a men's softball league?
There is, but that is some really niche stuff. That does exist, not in America in like at a professional level, but that is also internationally. And I'll send you some clips for that too.
Women's college softball is huge deal.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Huge deal. Like does insane TV ratings. And
it is funny because I often refer to it, especially for casuals, as just a better version of baseball in some respects. So depending on the television in some respects.
I think you would like that more, Benji. Like as a new person to this type of sport, women's college softball is quicker, shorter, faster, condensed, more exciting. And less like more high energy and less like, stick up your ass.
Better for the TikTok generation.
Yes. Like 100%.
I have no clue what I was going to say.
Okay. Great. Jordan, before we get out of here, do you have any cycling questions?
My only cycling question was actually the question that we had asked on Twitter, which is, if I was to go watch a cycling, if you could pick one for me to go watch, what would it be and why? You don't have to answer it now.
Let's have a quick chat about this, Benji. My first thought when Jordan asked me this,
yeah,
was I would have him watch the last 15 minutes of any San Remo, of any Milan San Remo, because it is the most exhilarating chunk of cycling. And I think it's very easy to understand. And there are so many different things that could happen. Like if you show anybody in the world, like Mohoric descending down the Poggio, they will understand that, right?
Yeah.
Now a full race? No, definitely not San Remo.
The thing is, for people that don't know, San Remo is this race of 299 kilometers, I'm pretty sure. That is basically, how long is that? Riding on your bike 299 kilometers, it's a 6 hour race, I bet, 6-7 hour race throughout the day. And you got to keep in mind, the entire parkour is flat basically until the last 30 kilometers. So nobody's doing anything except for just riding until they get to the point towards the end of the race where shit is going to happen. So you don't watch it entirely, or you're
that's why you watch.
You're just crazy.
It's like it. And the funny thing is, every year it's guaranteed that the first 90% of the race will be completely boring, and the last 10% is fucking awesome every single time. So that comes to mind. Exactly. What else comes to mind for you, Benji? Like a specific year and a specific race.
I fully agree that the ending of a San Remo would be good as like an average race of like a monument race, which is like a great one-day race in cycling. That is like something you could watch. And the issue with a lot of races in cycling is that you need some context to start, because a lot of races in cycling are part of like a multi-day event, a stage race. That's true. If you suddenly have to watch, there's this amazing race last year, the Col du Granon stage, which is like a mountain in the Tour de France, that a specific stage was action from the start to the end, but you already need to know who was the leader of the race before that day started. Mm-hmm. You'd have to know what the rivalry is, who's close to that leader to see what's going to happen there. And that's a bit more difficult because there's more tactics involved and so forth. So I'd also go for like a race that's relatively straightforward without too much context, so a one-day race. And I think
if you
show someone Paris-Roubaix, which is a race where the last 100 kilometers, 40% of it is done on like old Roman cobblestones. So that's bloody epic. And if it's raining, it's super epic. Mm-hmm. But then you're giving them a perception that every cycling race might be like that, which is not the case.
Again, this gets back to how we were thinking about it. So
I got sucked in because of RVV, because of the Ronde van Vlaanderen, which is the Tour of Flanders, which is a one-day race throughout Flanders. And I think that is where I would tell someone to start, because I think the important things to understand if you're getting into cycling are understanding how topography and the changes in topography impact the race, right? When you go uphill, when you go downhill, when it's flat, and understanding the team tactics of like what it means to have someone in front of you, right? The more steep a road is, the less important it is to have someone in front of you, right? Just as a general rule. And so what I really like about Ronde van Vlaanderen, which is I have the poster behind me on my desk, is it has a little bit of everything, and it gives you the atmosphere of the race. And there's a ton of really good documentaries out there that explain how it works.
I agree. I think there's one issue with Ronde van Vlaanderen, with the Tour of Flanders. That's that a lot of editions are very chaotic. So you'd need to look for a specific edition that is kind of structured, as in at this point in the race, certain teams are sending a rider into the attack to have some riders up the road to benefit from that later in the race. Then at a certain point, you see the actual leaders come to the front. If there's a structured Tour of Flanders that I can find, that would be the one, I think.
Well, I'll extend this homework assignment to you further. If you want to identify the perfect match for me to watch, and not going to guarantee anything about how it will impact my cycling interest, but I want to give you the opportunity to showcase the best of the sport. Yeah. But we hope, and
honestly, Benji, like, just show one of Patrick's videos. It's like, that's also how I get into it, right?
Right.
Is for context, Patrick's my co-host, but I also want to say, I'm also going to ask it on Twitter and see what the people say and see if it's as crazy as the offers that you got.
That's a great idea. That's a great idea. It's only fair. It's only fair. And we'll see if you get responses that you think are stupid the way that we did. But
definitely.
Benji, this we are going to cut it here. Obviously, you could ask questions for another 50 hours and we could try to answer them. You can continue to send questions to us by all means. We are looking forward to staying in touch. But if you tell us where people can follow you and where they can see your, obviously not just the work that you do, but this tweet that you're going to put out, you know, asking for more cycling recommendations and whatnot. And any final thoughts now that we did this, if this, you know, final thoughts as we close it out.
First of all, you can find the podcast we have, the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast, on YouTube with video and on podcast players. Mm-hmm. You can find my own YouTube channel where I cycle myself. And if you want to see me suffer on a climb and so forth, then it's Benji Nassen on YouTube. And on Twitter, it's Benji Nassen, my name. And importantly about that, I promise you, if one of you two can send me when the season starts of baseball in 2024, I promise you I will irregularly tweet about baseball
Give
in 2024.
Give it a shot. Good. Hey.
Well,
Benji, follow me,
Benji,
guys.
I know that the summer is busy for you. There are two MLB games in London this year. Okay.
Oh,
in June.
Why?
Because we're a dumb sport. We're trying to grow it. There are games in London now annually. So on the 8th and 9th of June, there will be games. So we'll see if we can snag you some tickets.
This is not an easy ticket to get, but we'll do our best. Benji, this was a pleasure. Thank you for the time. Thank you
it
for
sure
the
was.
Wisdom. Because for all the dumb questions you brought, boy, did you, boy, were
he
you
crushed
kind
it,
of on
dude.
Top of it.
He crushed
you,
it.
You were asking
it was
the right
fun.
Things. I hope this was fun for you as it was for us. Hopefully everybody enjoyed this New Year's special Lantern Rouge crossover unexpectedly. This was a lot of fun. Thank you, Jake. Thank you to Isabella Joseph for producing as always. And thank you, Benji. And we will talk to you all very soon.
I will quickly say before we say goodbye, Jordan, we get a lot of nice messages from people about our show.
Yep.
And how it is part of the rhythm of their lives.
Yep.
And I feel that way about Benji's show and about Aww. What he has created. And I think that as podcasters and people who create content, we don't get to see our audience a lot, right? That's a weird part of it. We feel like we're lucky that we get to talk to people with people we like and we know, and there was a relationship there. But very rarely do we get to experience the other side of that, right? And so whenever we get to do like a live event is really cool. And so, but let me just say, Benji, from the bottom of my heart, thank you for the work that you do. You helped me fall in love with a sport that has made my life Aww. Richer and better, and I cannot thank you enough. So we'll end with that
thank
little
you.
Bit of wholesomeness today.
You made me fall in love with a sport that, I don't know if I fell in love with the sport, to be
no.
honest. I enjoyed watching it, to be
That's
clear.
Fine.
It
That's
was
all
not,
we, you, like, you played the game, man. And we
Benji's like, I endured sport? This. I survived this.
It is a sport that you kind of start watching in the background mm-hmm. and then you're like, oh, I missed something.
mm-hmm. Sound familiar?
But
now just imagine why doing that like 100 plus 160 or 100, 200 more times. It's not that big of a deal.
Amazing. Amazing.
All right.
Thank you all,
Benji.
The listeners.
We're done. Thank you all for listening. Hope everyone had a wonderful new year and we will talk to you soon. Goodbye.
SiriusXM Podcasts.